coalition forces and begin striking selected targets of military importance.
It would be a decision which could only be taken once.
There's no argument over the choice between peace and war.
Unconfirmed reports about Gaddafi being captured.
This morning, I want to talk about the future of Europe.
Burning Point.
Hello and welcome to the show with me, Екатерина Кудошкина. This Wednesday, NATO headquarters in Brussels hosted the first high-level meeting of the 60-member coalition targeting the Islamic State militant group. Some of its participants have described the meeting, chaired by the U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, as the end of the beginning of the formation of the coalition. In fact, it took place almost a year after the ISIS had launched a major offensive and got hold of some of the key cities in western Iraq. Up till now, the main strategy to counter the spread of the so-called caliphate, which is the area already controlled by the ISIS, spreading to some parts of Syria, some parts of Iraq, and some parts of Lebanon, consisted in airstrikes on ISIS targets. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said that around 1,000 strikes, both in Syria and Iraq, were having a significant impact. Yet there are many, both in the region and beyond, who believe that the strategy has not been too efficient. We're now joined by our guest speaker, Dr. Taleb Ibrahim, political analyst based in Damascus.
Yes, this conference really reflects the confusion and absence of strategy in respect to the United States and its allies. This coalition does not have any certain strategy how and why they will fight the ISIS. This is one. Secondly, I don't think that this coalition is a real coalition. It is some states, some countries have been led by United States to do a military action in the Middle East, and this is to serve the interests of United States. So the real goal of this coalition is not to fight ISIS. This is a fable because they made ISIS. The real goal is the geopolitical and geostrategic goals for United States in the Middle East.
What kind of goals are we referring to?
Yes, as now you see United States, after a very long war in Iraq, went without any bases, without any beneficiary to United States. So now they are trying to come again to the region, to the Middle East, and under the headlines of fighting ISIS and terrorism. I think this is common in American policy in the last century. They separated hundreds of military air bases in the war. They, at that time, they were talking that about fighting communism and about fighting the Soviet Union, etc., etc. But the real goal, the real target was the hegemony of United States and the whole of the world and the interests of American companies and that American interests in oil, in gas, in other natural resources in the world. Now Americans are coming again, but the headline of their work has been changed. Now they want to fight ISIS, and they found and they created the ISIS to give them the excuse to come again to Middle East. They don't want to leave this area. They want their hegemony. They want military bases, and they want, this is very important, they want to make what we call it a belt of military bases around Russia. United States now is very much afraid of the great Russian power, which emerged and rising very, very highly. So this is the main goal, how to size Russia, how to put end to Russian ambitions to be again as a superpower. This is the most important thing in United States strategy, especially in Middle East.
But that strategy certainly creates a threat not only for Russia, but also the regional countries and the neighboring countries. Is there any way to counter it?
Let us talk in a different way. If ISIS is a headache, United States intervention is a cancer. This is the reality about what is going in Middle East. The United States is able to create problems, but it is not able to make any resolution for the problems. When United States is creating any problem, they are asking others to resolve the problems which have been done by United States. This is very well common. Another thing, in the last century and in the beginning of this century, United States was able to launch wars, but they didn't win a any war. And the consequences of these wars destabilize the world. The United States does not care about that. It will say to others, you must solve the problems which was done by United States. This is not instructive, and this is not a policy indeed. I think now United States is not a power or not a superpower of stability of the world. It's working for devastating the peace and stability in all of the world. This is very, very well known, especially in Middle East. They destabilized Syria, Libya, Yemen, Iraq, Egypt, etc., etc. If you ask them what is the beneficiary behind that to the United States of America, they will say they don't know. But this destabilizing the Middle East is beneficiary to Saudi Arabia, to Israel, and now American policy is not a real American policy. We were always in Middle East as a political analyst and as a leaders of our society. We were always saying the following. Our problem with the United States in the Middle East, that United States itself hasn't any American policy. There are Israeli policy which is being implemented by United States. And now, in Syrian case, there's a Saudi policy which is being implemented by United States. This is the core of the problem of American intervention in Middle East.
One of the points in that strategy was delegitimizing the IS.
Yes, indeed, the ISIS is not legitimized because it reached could size a large area of the land and put control on some cities and some provinces in Syria and Iraq by terrorism and by force, and this is not legitimized anyway. Another choice, if the international community and United States will delegitimize the Islamic states of Iraq and Sham, it shouldn't be delegitimized. And the most important thing is that Islam, the Islamic world and Islam itself, which does not recognize such an extremism, such an extremist act, slaughtering people, beheading people. This is not an Islam, and this is a very important part of delegitimizing. It is really to remove religious legitimacy from the Islamic State of Iraq. This is a very, very good thing. We must work for it.
Sir, thank you so much. And just to remind you, our guest speaker was Dr. Taleb Ibrahim, political analyst based in Damascus. This is Burning Point. We're talking about the first meeting of the anti-ISIS coalition. And now we are joined by our next guest speaker, Dr. Charles Heyman, expert in security and defense policies based in the UK.
There's no doubt that things are moving forward and that they have made, or the coalition, and it's a 60-nation coalition, have made some progress in that the air attacks on both ISIS in Syria and in northern Iraq have been successful to a certain extent in slowing down the advance of ISIS. They are reasonably effective at stopping ISIS moving around. They're able to target convoys. They're able to target installations where they know that there are ISIS forces involved. But this is very, very early days. And they are right to say that this is probably a battle that will take a generation at least, because it's more than just a military struggle. This is really a battle of ideas. And the military element that you see at the beginning of this campaign is going to be probably reasonably minor in the overall scheme of things.
When these people are saying that they need to, like they put it, delegitimize the Islamic State, what could that imply? And how could the battle of ideologies go?
Well, first of all, it's going to be difficult to delegitimize it in the eyes of everyone in the world, because there is no doubt that the Islamic State has a considerable amount of support amongst the Sunni Muslim population of the world. Not 100% support by any means, but more support than anybody probably initially thought they had. And that's one of the reasons that they survive. This is going to have to be a struggle conducted by the coalition on many fronts and in many places of the world as well, not just in Iraq and in Syria. And it's going to have to be conducted at a number of levels, not just the military level that you see at the moment. It's going to have a political dimension. an economic dimension, technological dimension, social dimensions. The coalition are going to have to move forward on all of these fronts. And it's going to take a long time, and it's going to be very difficult. And the end result is still in doubt. I mean, there is nothing that says that the coalition are going to win this battle. I mean, the coalition are going to have to spend a lot of money, a lot of treasure, a lot of blood will be spilt, and they're going to have to do an awful lot more than they're doing at the moment if they think they're going to win this battle.
Mr. Heyman, the mere fact that the ISIS is based mostly in Iraq and Syria, does it have any bearing to the operation, the international operation in Iraq, which started in 2003?
Oh, I think, I mean, almost every analyst in the world will say, of course it has. The politicians will say no, especially the politicians in the West. But, I mean, there is no doubt whatsoever that this is almost certainly a direct result of what happened in 2003. And the old saying is, when you start something like this, like what happened in 2003, you have to reap the whirlwind that comes at you later, in later years. And so 2003 was the catalyst for what is going on now. I mean, there is no doubt about that.
You know, something which really hits your eye is the corruption in the military, in the Iraqi military.
Well, again, the corruption in the armed forces is once again a direct result of what happened in 2003. I mean, it is a tragedy. The reason that the Iraqi armed forces have turned and run in many, many places in Iraq in the face of the Islamic State forces is because of appalling leadership at all levels. I mean, if you want soldiers to fight, and everybody in the Russian army will tell you this, everybody in the American army will tell you this, if you want them to fight and you want them to fight well, they have to have leaders who they respect, and the leaders have to get out in front, and the leaders have to say, follow me. And that's not happening in Iraq. It's almost certainly going to take a very long time before it does happen. And until that happens, then the Iraqi army is not going to be in a position where it can actually take on and defeat ISIS on the ground.
What do you expect of politicians?
The vast majority of those politicians, they have no military experience whatsoever. And they have this feeling that you can dress people up in a uniform and just send them out with a weapon and they will behave superbly. It doesn't happen like that. They don't understand. Those politicians don't understand the nature of conflict. They don't understand the nature of warfare. And until they understand what they're dealing with, and they really don't understand that, until they understand what they're dealing with, they won't be able to come up with effective solutions. And they are driven, in the main, by their chances of being elected at their next election. And that, of course, is their number one priority for most of them. Not all. There are some very good ones there. But most of them, the priority is being elected. And they don't understand for one second just how fearsome, how dedicated, and how well-led the fighters of the Islamic State are. And you can't deny their success on the ground. They are brave and they are motivated. And until our politicians understand that to defeat them on the ground, they need, first of all, to defeat them militarily on the ground, to winkle them, dig them out of cities in Iraq that they've captured. And that takes an awful lot of firepower, an awful lot of well-trained soldiers, and almost certainly from the coalition nations. Because if they don't do that, all that will happen is that ISIS will find another way of getting around the air attacks that are actually punishing them at the moment.
By the way, there were statements made. The Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan said that they are supporting the Islamic State. And,
of course.
And this is only, well, and this is only a tip of the iceberg, which means that the whole of the Central Asia could be set on fire.
I mean, you're right to say that this is only the tip of the iceberg. And one of the things that the Islamic State have for their advantage is that anyone can claim to be part of the Islamic State. In whatever attack they mount, if that attack takes place in London or in Chechnya or in Moscow or in Washington or anywhere at all, they can say, yes, we are Islamic State. We support the Islamic State. So it becomes a franchise, just like McDonald's, a franchise that can go worldwide. And that's why I say this is also a war of ideas.
Sir, thank you so much. And just to remind you, this time our guest speaker was Dr. Charles Heyman, expert in security and defense policies based in UK. Well, and now we end this edition of Burning Point, brought to you by me, Ekaterina Kudoshkina. Thank you so much for staying with us. Goodbye, and take care.